Hello.
Hi, Vaughn. It's Todd Hancock in Vancouver.
Hi.
How are you?
How are you?
I'm good. Thank you for taking the time to jump on the Toddcast here in Vancouver, Canada.
For sure. Thanks for having me.
You bet. Have you been? Have you been to Vancouver before?
I have not been to Vancouver.
Interesting. And where are you? Where do you live? Where am I calling you at?
I live in New York City.
Oh, nice. Okay. See, and I've never been to New York City before. My wife's been tons, but I've never been.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Your wife's smart.
Yeah, my wife used to work in fashion, so she used to, you know, go there and do some buying and that kind of thing. But yeah, I've never been. I've heard it's awesome, but I've never been. Love to go. So you are now, what, I guess a month, just a little bit over a month into Coach Vaughn's Corner, your new show on the NBA radio channel on Sirius XM. Congrats on that show, by the way.
Thank you very much. And we're in a holiday hiatus right now.
Right.
And we may be actually looking to expand into a different new channel where Coach Vaughn's Corner can open and expand to pop culture. My podcast, Coach Vaughn Podcast, which is available on iTunes. If you go to my website, coachvaughn.com, you can get information about the show as well as the podcast. But my podcast originally started out love basketball comedy, where I use sports to anchor into real life conversation about relationships, whatever's going on, and, you know, current events, pop culture. And also, I'm a huge basketball fan, so I love talking barbershop talk, you know, sports, basketball, all fun stuff. So right now, like I said, Coach Vaughn's Corner on Sirius XM is on a holiday hiatus and looking for new channels for the upcoming year.
I know it's early. You've only just begun, but are there any highlights so far with the show?
Everyone's favorite segment seems to be the soap opera segment. It's an improv, off-the-top skit that I do, and it's called The Young and the Restless of the NBA.
Okay.
So whatever's happening during the week, we'll play, like, this dramatic soap opera music underneath me, and if my guests want to chime in, and usually they do because my guests are usually comedians, we'll just improv a skit based on whatever's happening. For instance, when Kyrie Irving threw the basketball into the stands, I don't know if you're familiar with that.
Yep.
But recently, yeah, Kyrie Irving threw the ball out of frustration into the stands. And I had two comedians on that day, and we improv the skit, and I played the ball. And I basically did. I just was basically like, oh, you know, I got into the NBA as an NBA ball because I don't like flying far distances. And that's why I don't like the NFL. You know, just silly little stuff like that. And that seems to be everybody's favorite segment is the young and the restless of the NBA. It's fun.
Right.
You know, it's not a perfect skit because it's improv.
Of course.
But it seems to work out and make people laugh really, really hard.
Right. And what is your first sports memory?
My first sports memory? Oh, God, I don't know. I'm from Pittsburgh. So I came out of my mother's vagina into a Steelers jersey, I think.
Right.
I don't know.
<Of course.>
I have no idea what my first... That's a great question. No one's ever asked me that question. My first sports memory? Heck, I don't know. I grew up in a small steel town about 30 miles south out of Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, Clairton, PA, where, you know, football is life, sports is life. High school football is, like, more important than everything.
Right.
So high school sports where I grew up was very big, and we had, the time I was there, we had an incredible football and basketball team, and I just gravitated towards basketball.
And so which were the first teams or, like, athletes and stuff to really grab your attention?
The first athletes to really grab my attention. That's another good question.
No, I've got a few.
I don't know. I again, my love of sports came from high school on. Mm-hmm. So I almost feel inclined to name my high school boyfriend as my
That's awesome.
Who, by the way,
love it.
After dating him in high school, I decided never to date athletes.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
I'll good, just huh? love the sport and not the dude.
Yeah. Yeah. What is your favorite sport to watch? And what's your favorite sport to play?
I'm not athletic at all. I don't play any sport. I can shoot basketball as long. I'm like a 10 for 10 shooter, if I'm exaggerating. If right. I'm being honest, I'm probably a 70% shooter from the free throw line. But that is if there's absolutely no one else around me on
no
the
pressure.
Court.
Like, no pressure at all.
Forget pressure. You can watch. Just don't come anywhere near me.
Right.
Like, if you're going to post up on me, if you're going to block me, like, just I'll just hand you the ball. I am not an athlete at all. I don't play. I'm just a fan. And it's always been basketball for me. Again, I grew up on football, but it just, you know, it never really clicked with me. It was just something. I like going to football live is fine. Baseball bores me to death unless I am at the park. I love going to baseball games live, but I can't watch it on TV. And I think with football, too, as soon as I hear the whistle blow, that's a cue for me to take a nap. But with basketball, you know, I could watch it all day. People, like, Christmas is coming up. Everyone who knows me knows that on Christmas Day, there's games from noon to midnight.
Right.
So if you want to get any part of me on Christmas Day, you have to catch me before noon, because I just sit there and I watch the games all day and I do my predictions and all of that.
Right,
which
right.
I'll be doing on my podcast, by the way. So if anyone's interested in listening to me ramble about sports, love, basketball, comedy, all those things, it's CoachVaughn.com.
Okay, okay. Let me hit you with the obvious. LeBron, MJ, who's the best all-time?
I hate that question. That's why I didn't even want to answer the question earlier, because, like, people, you have to say Michael Jordan, and he wasn't. I mean, he was amazing.
Right.
I tend to be the type of person that leans towards the underdog. So when Michael Jordan was running around the court being amazing, I was like, look at Scottie Pippen. You
right.
know what I mean?
Right.
And you almost can't say you love the Detroit Pistons, the Bad Boys, you know, because it's like, oh, they represented a particular thing that I guess at the time wasn't so popular, but I love Isaiah Thomas. So I don't know that I would lean directly towards Michael Jordan, but in terms of who's the GOAT, I argue the point all the time that it's LeBron James.
Okay. Okay.
And I can support LeBron James as an underdog.
Like, imagine that,
crazy.
LeBron James as an underdog. Like,
well,
what?
You know, it's an amazing thought, isn't it? But
yeah,
when you take
really
a look
is.
At the scrutiny that he is under, and all he does is continue to be amazing over and over and over,
yeah.
And people scrutinize him, shoot him down, on and off the court, I can't really find a thing wrong with this man. So for that alone, he gets the GOAT.
All right. To the comedian side of things, just found out that you're performing at Caroline's on Broadway on January 15th, part of the Breakout Artist Comedy Series. That's pretty cool.
That is huge for me. That is amazing. I'm excited. I can't wait. I'm very, very excited. It's my first big gig of the year, setting off 2019 really big. And I love working at Caroline's. I just recently worked there with Donnell Rollins and Chris Redd from SNL.
Mm.
It's a great club. I've been in and out of Caroline's forever, and to be headlining there in January is very exciting for me.
Yeah, totally. Do you specifically tailor your set depending on, you know, where you're doing it? City
no,
by city?
Absolutely not.
No?
Absolutely not. I'm really against tailoring sets per se. Now, if someone is hiring me for a specific job, be it an event like an award ceremony or something like that where it has to be tailored mm-hmm. for that event, then absolutely. But if you're speaking of comedy and doing a comedy show and during your set, then no, I don't tailor my material to try and accommodate whatever crowd I think might be there, because what if that's not the crowd that's there? And as a comedian, how do you find your audience if you're tiptoeing around every audience trying to appease the audience? Everyone isn't for everyone. So the way to find your audience is just to stick to your material, stay true to your material, work, and then your audience just gravitates towards you. And if someone leaves because I'm not their particular flavor, that's great, because the people that stayed are, you know, mm-hmm. you're opening up a seat for them to bring a friend that will enjoy me. I don't tailor to where I'm going. I will if I'm traveling or if I'm doing like a road gig. You know, you get in early, you check out the scene, check out the town, and yeah, sure, you'll get material just from being around. And I like to open a lot of times, or just be well informed about where I'm at, and be relatable to the people that are there, mm-hmm. and just see what, you know, the people in the town and the city that I'm dealing with. But as far as adjusting my material, no. I stick right to the plan.
Right, right. Well, that's more what I meant was, like, you know, if you were in Boston, would you do like some Boston stuff? Would you do, if you're in Los Angeles, would you try to find what the people of LA are talking about, that kind of thing? But yeah, and for the people that are leaving your show, like, bye, media, you know, bye.
Yeah, no, I think because of social media and everything that's going on in society right now, and we're all interconnected and intertwined. There's nothing that I'm talking about, because my comedy comes from my truth, from my life. You know, I'm not talking about anything that people can't relate to on the other side of the map. Mm-hmm. You know, I'm a mother, mm-hmm. you know, I'm a woman of a certain age that has a lot of experience in relationships. You know, it's very universal. A lot of things that I'm talking about, even race, politics, and all of that, it's from my perspective, but I don't think that whomever on the other side of the map, they're not going to know that these things are happening or be able to relate to me as a person. And it's my job as a comedian to deliver whatever it is I'm talking about, even if it's something you never heard of. It's my job as a comedian, not just to be funny, but also to be clear in my delivery so that you can understand what I'm saying. Mm-hmm. But of course, like, if you're in their town and you go eat at a local little restaurant and you know, everyone's ordering these particular hot dogs with like a green bun, you know, you're going to acknowledge that. Like, yo, right. I went to the local corner store and everybody's eating green buns. What's wrong with you people? You take Boston too seriously, you know, whatever.
Right. And for you, which comedian present day just makes you howl?
Another question I don't particularly like, because it almost seems like you're playing favorites.
Right.
But you're not. There's so many people in this game that I would consider vets and like confidants and mentors and people that I could connect with, you know, if I have any question about anything or just, you know, just vibe with. It's so many.
Yeah.
But I would say Donnell Rollins, when I work with him, I learned so much just from watching him work. And he's hilarious. Like, you're just not going to not laugh. And I think that goes to the point that I said earlier, where even if he's not your particular flavor, in which you're from the same place or understand the exact same things or relate like, oh, that's me, the way he does it, you're going to get it anyway. Mm-hmm. And it's incredible to watch him work. And I always have fun with him too, whenever I'm working with him.
Yeah. You know, I haven't read your memoir, Speak Fluent Man, but I want to grab it. I want to give it a read. Tell us about that, writing a memoir. How long did that take?
It took a lot out of me, and it's one of those things where people are like, oh, you're an author, you wrote a book, or you think you'll write more. No, it's drains. It's so draining, and maybe it's because of the subject matter of the memoir and mm-hmm. the loss that's involved in it. But I did it. I put it out there. I can't honestly remember the exact amount of time it took. It was more than a year, I know that. of putting it all together and the mental and emotional process of it. You know, it wasn't something that I would ever want to sit through again, but I did it, not for me, but, you know, the memoirs about my relationship, you know, with Patrice O'Neill, whose death date was a few days ago. He's been gone for 7 years, and we were in a relationship for 10 years. And he wanted me to write a book from my perspective as a woman in a relationship with him and the things that I learned, you know, in our 10-year relationship. Because if anyone is familiar with Patrice, he had a very unique point of view and philosophies when it came to, you know, out-of-the-box philosophies when it came to relationships, love relationships and women. Mm-hmm. And he said that, you know, I speak fluent Patrice. I'm a black belt in his philosophies, and that I should, you know, write a book because women listen to me differently than they do him, and, you know, I could be of service in that way. And it was something that I didn't want to do at the time either. I gravitated away from that, but to appease his request, he said, you know, just tell me the top things that you would feel would go into this book if you were to ever do it. So I gave him an outline, and it was an outline of things like entitlement, double standards, sex, jealousy, and trust, things like that. And the outline that I gave him, the bullet points that I gave him, became the chapters
right.
of the book, Speak Fluent Man. Patrice was very quotable, is driven by a lot of his quotes and some of the things that people are familiar with. And, you know, I give stories like, okay, this is what he said and what he meant. This is how I received it. This is how we dealt with it in the relationship. And this is, you know, essentially why we were together for 10 years and why it worked. And it's a memoir. Some people consider it relationship book advice. I think that if you read the reviews of the book, people say it's life-changing information, and for that I'm proud. And he was right. He said that, he kissed me on my forehead and said I would have a bestseller. That's not particularly true right now, but he did say that people would feel that it was information that could change their lives. And he was right about that. And the only reason it's probably not a bestseller is that, honestly, it's not something that I'm out there constantly promoting. A lot of people don't even know about the book. Mm-hmm. But I just wanted to honor him by, you know, fulfilling that request.
Right. Well, interesting. Vaughn, thank you again for doing this. I would love to get outside of sports and of comedy and of course, what you're known for. What was your first concert?
My first concert that I attended?
Yeah.
First concert. Oh, my God. I want to say it was like New Edition Bobby Brown Tour or something like that.
Okay.
I can't remember. Wow. I feel like you're trying to indirectly ask me how old I am.
No, not at all.
My first concert was Marvin Gaye in 1972. No, I'm kidding. Yeah. I wish I would have had these questions ahead of time because I have no, my memory's not that great.
Yeah, a little bit of searching through some cobwebs there, right?
Letting stuff go. Like, I just started filtering out my brain like an old computer or old storage bin. Like, hey, you're not using this stuff right here.
Right.
Throw it away.
You have got to go.
You don't have to remember this stuff anymore.
Yeah. How about this? Here's a knock out of the park for you. What are you watching right now? Like, what are the shows you're binge watching you can't get enough of?
Well, okay, so I did this CNN year-end wrap-up called All the Best, All the Worst of 2018, mm-hmm. and I was so disappointed that I forgot. They asked me about television, and it hasn't aired yet, but check it out when it does air on CNN. It's going to air over the holidays and stuff,
yeah.
And that was one of the questions that they asked. We went over all these different TV shows, and I forgot to mention my favorite show, Power. Like, I was like, oh, my God, how did I forget to mention 50 Cent, Get the Strap, Power.
Right.
I love Power. I can't wait for the new season. Like, that's one of the shows that I race to see. It's not on right now as you and I are speaking, but that's one of my favorite shows in general that I forgot to mention on the year-end wrap-up. So you just gave me an opportunity to say it now. Right. As far as what I'm binge-watching right now, I'm one of those people that reject stuff when it's popular and I catch up later sometimes. And The Walking Dead, I'm kind of binge-watching right now. So if it's on season a zillion, I'm on season like three.
Right.
It's really good, though. It's kind
it
of
is good.
Gross.
Yeah.
It's kind of gross. I'm not happy, you know, sitting down to watch TV and eat, and then I'm watching guts being eaten. But other than that, it's pretty good.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Do you believe that aliens have visited Earth?
I believe that we are all aliens because Earth is floating around the universe, and we are not exempt from the universe, so we are all aliens.
That is a fantastic answer. Never have had
Aren't
that.
Aren't we floating
ever.
Around in space as well? Like,
I'll take that. I'm an alien, sure. I'm in.
We are totally floating around. And I'll tell you this. Kyrie Irving changed his mind about it being a flat earth. But if he comes to New York and decides to come to New York and changes his mind and go back to saying it's a flat earth, I'm just going to go with whatever he says. Let's go next.
If you could have one superpower, which power would you want to have?
Well, I am already a superhero, and I already have a superpower, and that is my feelings, my instincts. What is the, you know, I love the Avengers. What is the one Avenger, like her, is it Mantis? Not Mantis.
Oh, the girl that, the empathy.
With the tentacles that was all the feelings.
Yeah.
That's me.
Interesting.
That's me.
Okay.
So I feel like I already have that superpower. I read people's energy so much so that I've had to learn how to control it a bit because it can affect me. But yeah, I believe heavily in energy and I'm very emotional. I feel everything, even in the room, even when doing comedy. Like, I don't care who goes on before me. At all. A lot of comics can be intimidated or scared, like, oh, such and such went up. It doesn't bother me at all because it's my job. Once I have the mic, it's my job to adjust the energy of the room and everybody in this room to me and what I'm doing and what I'm saying. So I have to wipe that slate clean. Within the first 30 seconds, you must forget whatever just happened. If you're still thinking about that, I'm not doing a good job. So, you know, Isaiah Thomas actually had a great quote about that. He said that as a point guard, he has the ball. He's controlling the motion of nine other people on the court. So I took that one further, and I said, that's very interesting. Not only, you know, when you have that ball, are you controlling the motions? You're controlling the emotions, the energy, not just of those nine people, of that entire arena and millions of people watching on television. For centuries and centuries to come that are replaying it over and over again. So I look at myself, you know, in the same way. When I have that microphone, I'm the point guard. I'm controlling every motion that's happening.
I love it.
So
that's
great. I can't lose unless I just don't do my job.
Right. Fair enough. What's your take on legalized marijuana? Just came to Canada a couple of months back.
I don't care. I don't smoke, so it's been around forever. It seems to not be harmful at all. I'm afraid that once it's commercialized and legalized and all that crap, that they're going to start putting stuff in it
probably
that's going to give you cancer and screw you all up. So it's probably best that it stayed illegal just so it could, you know, most of it can stay pure. But I don't judge either way. I'm happy that it's something that's becoming legal that doesn't seem to be harmful to people. But I will advocate for saying if there is anyone in jail for weed, for marijuana, let's just take a look at their case and get them out of there.
Yeah, totally agree. And I agree with you, by the way, about the them adding in additives to make it you know, harmful or whatever. That's why for me, it's never going to change. Like, I'm going to still keep buying from the same guy, my same buddy that's always grown for years and years. I'm not going to suddenly go to a dispensary and, you know what I mean? Like, it's not Just because it's become legal here doesn't mean anything's changed for me.
Right. A lot of people probably feel that way, but they also know that the magical theys, you know, the people behind the magical screen that we don't know that's controlling everything, they know that people feel that way as well. So what they'll likely do is make that illegal for you to be getting it from, like, that person is doing something, like, if he doesn't have a particular license and the license says you must include this FCC regulated chemical in it, blah blah blah, they'll find a way to screw it up is what I'm saying, even with that thought in mind. They'll find a way to you know, kill us all.
Funny.
So live life while you can.
That same conversation with my wife the other night. One last
Your
question.
Your wife is so smart.
She is. She is smart.
I love her.
Last question. It's an oddball. Have you ever had a near-death experience?
Yeah, that's my... I have many. God has been watching over me, and I must have a purpose, and I believe we all have a purpose on earth until we're no longer here. Your purpose has been fulfilled, whatever that may be. So... I have been blessed to be in New York City for a long, long time, from small town USA, and I could give you probably 10 stories, but I'll give you my 9/11 story. Mm. And I'll tell you, 9/11, I had to get to Jersey, and to get to Jersey, I was in Midtown. I was staying in Midtown, and... it's the ACE line, the blue line. To get to Jersey, I had to take the ACE line at 50th Street down to the World Trade Center, then transfer at the World Trade Center to the PATH train, get on the PATH train, get to Jersey, Newark Penn Station, get on the bus, take a bus to Hillside, New Jersey, which is where I was going because my daughter at the time, my daughter's grandmother babysat her overnight. So, this is the trip I have to make. But this is, you know, early 2000. I'm super broke. I'm still kind of super broke. I'm working on that. But as a comic, you kind of, you know, stay in a certain pocket for a while. But I got down to the World Trade Center, and I didn't have enough money to get on the PATH train. And so I got out and went upstairs. And I was looking for a Washington Mutual Bank, which tells you how long ago this is again, even though you know when 9/11 happened. My bank at the time was Washington Mutual. And I did not have enough money to just go to any regular ATM and incur any fees. That, like, it's unaccessible to get fees because that would be a 99-cent sandwich that I could eat somewhere for the week. I can't afford those fees. So I'm searching for a Washington Mutual. I find one, I take money out, and then I go purchase, was it still tokens at the time or a card? I don't remember, probably tokens. Either way, I purchased whatever I needed to get on the PATH train. And I remember before I went in to purchase the PATH train ticket, it was such a beautiful day. And I sat down right outside at where there were benches, and I was looking up. I was like, oh, my God, it's so nice out. And... again, this will date it because no one wears watches anymore. This voice in my ear just came over me and said, look at your watch. Look at what time it is. You got to go. Her grandma's going to kill you. You're going to be late. And I looked down at my watch, and it was like 8:45 a.m. And I went in, and I got on the PATH train, went to Jersey, got on the bus, took the bus to Hillside. I got to Hillside, and when I rang the doorbell and they opened the door in a panic attack because they all knew my route to get there, they were like, oh, my God. And I said, what? What is wrong? What is everybody? And they told me what was happening. I'm like, I was just there. Not only was I just there, I was just sitting on the bench. I was looking up at the sky. I didn't see anything. Everything's fine. You guys watch too much TV. And they brought me over to the television. They're like, look. And right when I stood in front of the TV, the first tower came down.
Wow.
I was speechless. I couldn't. Wow. I'm getting chills now. Like, I would never forget that feeling in that moment where I was just sitting there and that could have landed on top of me.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
And the lives that were lost that day, it will never emotionally recover from that. And every year I see people posting on 9/11, never forget, never forget, never forget. And I don't do that because I like to remind people just my experience and my loss of my fiance when he died 7 years ago. And I said, I like to remind people on 9/11 that we have the convenience of saying never forget once a year on 9/11. But there are people and their families that have to live with that loss every single day.
Mm-hmm.
So that's my, I guess, near-death story.
And, wow. Yeah, and, that's quite the story, Vaughn.
Yeah, it really is. I take that and I say whatever purpose God has for me and is being delivered through comedy and through writing and radio and television and all these different things that I'm doing. I'm grateful and I'm humble and I'm humbly grateful and I want to make people laugh, but I also want to make sure that people know the reason I think I'm here is because things have been pretty rough for me. I grew up rough. Nothing has been given to me easily. I've had to fight through a lot of things, and I've had to have faith through some of the worst circumstances from being a little girl, grew up in a project with drugs infecting my family and alcoholism and a lot of horrible, horrible things. But I'm still here. So I hope that the one thing I'm doing is inspiring people that no matter what, you can have the courage to live whatever dreams and truth that you have, even if it's something as absurd as being a comedian.
Right, right.
You know, if I could do it, you know, certainly you can, whoever that you is that's listening.
Mm-hmm.
And whatever that blueprint is or that path is for you is your individual path. And I just hope that people, starting with my daughter, will look at me and go, I know that faith is real. I know God is real. And I know that you can do it if you put your heart and your faith and your time and your work into it.
Mm-hmm.
'Cause people like to forget about the work part. Like,
right.
Oh, I've been
that,
praying.
The hard work part. I don't like that very
been
much.
Working.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
God is not a genie, but other than that, he's pretty cool.
Right on. Vaughn, I love your story, and thanks again for joining us here in Vancouver. You're simply at Vaughn DiCarlo on Twitter, VaughnDiCarlo.com for your website, Instagram, and everything else.
Yeah, and to make it easy for people, because some people misspell Vaughn, the DiCarlo part, so my website, Coach V-O-N, Coach Vaughn, gives you links to everything. My social media, you'll see the little icons for that. You'll see my book. You can get a link to my book there.
Okay.
Also, you'll get the link to Caroline's for tickets. I can offer you guys a promo code for purchase online. The promo code is Coach Vaughn, Coach V-O-N. And that'll make the tickets only $10. And if you know, wow, Caroline's, you know that's pretty good.
That's great, yeah.
So
that's great.
Yeah,
anyway.
For the advance tickets, make me look good. Get it sold out and packed, and all that good stuff. If you're in New York City, come see me. Not adjust my material for you.
Right. Awesome, Vaughn. We will see you online, and thanks again.
Awesome. Thanks for having me.
You bet.